I'd like this to be a roundtable and just sort of have everybody contributing. I've participated in a lot of discussions on this topic in the past, and the one thing I found is that there's a couple areas that prove to be quagmires, and we could easily spend 6 days just talking about that and not figure anything out. So if we hit those, I'm going to try to just nudge it away. That's probably the only time I'll be like, let's talk about something else. But for the most part, I'd love to hear people's thoughts on how they've tried to do this with their companies, how they've tried to do this independently, times they've seen it succeed, times they've seen it fail, spots in games where somebody actually did it and it worked, tools for doing this, how traditional narrative works in an interactive setting. Obviously a pretty broad and free-ranging topic, so I just want to kick it off to start with. Has anybody here done emergent narrative like on a game they've actually worked on? Wow, cool. Okay, emergent narrative, so, okay, definitions, cool. Definitions are definitely a quagmire, so I won't let this go too long. But so when I say emergent narrative, the way I think about it is a story expressed by the game, like as a story, not, you know, because like there's a lot, you know, every time I play a game, it's a story somehow. But a story that the game is trying to tell that was not explicitly authored by a writer, designer, or somebody in the game. Something where the game systems collaborated and to create a story that would surprise somebody who worked on the game.
There is an easy case of this. In fact, you know, one of the easiest gaming cases of this would be the game Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. You have, as a DM, you can never guess what your players are going to do. So there is not necessarily an emergent narrative, but an interactive narrative.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like a little different. It's like, I mean, if you design a game system, you know, I'm sure I can go take Neverwinter Nights online module and make, you know, it's not really the game itself, it's more like a game system.
Sure.
Making, like, you know, narratives that I'm sure, you know, BioWare did not anticipate.
Mm-hmm.
I want to push that a little further. Persistent worlds in Neverwinter Nights are something that BioWare totally didn't even, you know, plan for in the design, but the community basically made, you know, mini MMOs with the engine that, you know, saw, you know, anywhere in the range of 0 to 64 players. But that's a...
Yeah.
I didn't know there was something about it. So, when we're talking about emergent narrative, are we including things like games that allow users to mod the game itself, or are we limiting it to games that have that on their own? Because I was thinking, computer games are really fundamentally different from, Dungeons and Dragons in a way, because the game, if it's on its own and not being modded, has to have a DM-like kind of presence itself.
Right. There have been a couple games that have tried to do a sort of virtual DM or a drama manager. Like, Left 4 Dead has the director, which is probably one of the most successful commercial applications I've seen of them trying to a studio or a game trying to dynamically manage the story that they're telling. Now, in the case of Left 4 Dead, they have the benefit of having a fairly simple story, and to do tense and release and have a good three-act structure, you can just crank a knob that's effectively just the number of zombies that are coming at you. And that's handy. And they do a good job at it. So I wonder if... Does anybody have any thoughts on whether that sort of system could be applied in a more emotional storytelling context that doesn't necessarily involve shooting zombies? Yes, hands.
What else is there?
Talk.
I don't know. You may have read this, but Chris Crawford on Interactive Storytelling is a good book. I'm like halfway through it, but... But yeah, that's pretty much anything I'd be saying here. I'd be echoing that.
Fair enough. There was something. Yeah.
So when you said that, it just popped into my head. Actually, kind of a whole game. But if you have a game not actually based on running around killing things, but a game based on trying to find ways to save things, whatever. Like there's a disease spreading. Cranking the knob. How many people are actually suffering from the disease?
Mm-hmm.
is a really good way. And I think, yes, it reflects the game mechanic, but because saving people is a very emotional hook, it also really, really heavily influences the story, especially if you allow people to establish relationships with individual characters, and then they may or may not be affected by the knob crank.
Right. So the trick is making a coherent story like that that has all those variables without it exploding into this exponential tree of content that all of a sudden you have to create. From my perspective as a designer, like, that's the interesting problem to me, is how do you structure this content in such a way that you don't just have to write every permutation of stuff that could happen depending on who's alive or dead. Quasi, or you just...
The way I've heard that a lot of people solve the problems by having more of, like, an abstract game and having, like, the game mechanics itself kind of author story. Like, there's a Gamma Sutra article talking about Thief, where there's a lot more of a story in almost getting caught, but then, like, overhearing stories and making sure you don't get caught, and that was the story that that people were a lot more interested in than the actual, like, metagame of why you're trying to go into people's houses and whatnot.
Right. There was the plot that the game was telling in cutscenes and
right.
whatnot, and then there was the story that the player was experiencing as they went through that world.
Right.
Yep.
I think I remember playing a game, I think it was called Masquerade. It was like kind of short demo where you go inside and you meet some friends or whatever that you have to
say.
Facade.
Yeah. But, like, I think that was pretty interesting way it always changed.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I was thinking about since I started talking about this is simply the fact that every single game I think of that's even tried it, like, devolving down into, like nitpicking over definitions, when you're talking about, like, a story that the designer or writer, you know, would not have expected, it's kind of weird because, like, there's definitely... I've never seen anything where it's completely open, where, like, there's always some components of something that they made. Like, they made some characters, or they made some locations, or they made something that would have directed the possible outcomes of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that I think, talking about your, you know, branching permutation thing, one of the ways you limit that is simply by creating possibilities for what are going to be the most common,
mm-hmm.
like, the tracks, and then kind of somewhat limiting and scoping out the ones that would be less common. So, and then the thing I actually thought of was Facade. For Facade, you're dealing with, you know, these two people in their apartment, okay, and you have a fixed location, you have a fixed number of people. There's a limited number of things that can happen in here. Then, following that further, there's an even further limited number of things, given the things that they say to you, that you're even likely to say to them,
mm-hmm.
and even likely to go do. Now, can I'm limiting my actions. I can't just bust off an axe and chop their heads off. You know, they're talking about their relationship, and they're obviously, you know, if there's a play that it's a couple of people in a room having relationship issues.
Right.
And so it's kind of directly focusing you to, you know, help them work with the relationship. And I think there's several possible outcomes to Facade, but because of all the constraints put on, and because of the assets created by the creators, there's only a limited number of possible paths and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think so for truly emergent narrative, I have no clue.
Right.
I have no idea. It's like a giant whole issue.
Right.
But I think creating building blocks is really where you want to...
And maybe designer surprise is a bad metric. Because you built the system, and you should have some idea of what its outcomes will be. I mean, do people think Facade was successful? Right.
What's your metric of success?
It was trying to do this emergent narrative thing where they were really controlling your interest curve and the flow, and there's a beginning, middle, and end, and tense and release, and it's essentially trying to make a dynamic, dramatic structure. Do we think, like, when you play Facade, do you feel like you're watching? Do you feel the same sort of experience you would get out of a well structured short story?
So my personal experience with this is that I actually thought it was pretty successful at that.
Okay.
However, I actually know way too much about its creation. And so when I think about whether or not it was successful from the amount of effort it took to make what they made, I think it was not even remotely successful yet. I think they're on the right path towards creating things like that, but the amount of labor that went
right.
in to create that very, very...
There's no way
very
it would scale to
it. It simply couldn't scale in the way that it was done.
I also
so.
Think there's some basic things about the way the interface worked of that which made it not successful as a game, and in particular,
you know, the sense of player agency, like the sense of like, I'm going to push this button in this character and get this predictable result, and I'm making a strategic choice in doing this, was simply not there, and that was largely because of the text input interface, at least for me.
So, back on the part topic of like designers being surprised by the result of emergent narrative, and kind of reflective of what we think is successful in Facade, is that it's kind of impossible to do anything good with like a completely player authored story.
Aha!
Essentially,
j'accuse.
Oh my god! You essentially, by doing that, you essentially, so any good story isn't written by the person reading it, right? So a good story is.
So why don't we all make movies?
Because we don't have that much money.
But like,
wow,
well,
that was like five
offensive
things in a row.
But okay, so my point, I'm getting kind of off track here. So my point is that a good story is laid out carefully by an author. If you give the person reading it complete choice on what to do during a story, they can go out and go kill everybody in town, which is completely unlike their character, right? So,
but the character is what you say it is.
Yeah.
But there's some responses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think 2 points. One, I think there's other than just the functional, you know, content creation, I think one of the fundamental problems with developing a system is that there are two design goals that are in tension. One being you want the open-endedness of I'm going to go from point A not to point B, but to, you know, any point I want, you know. And the other, there's I want a compelling story arc.
Mm-hmm.
One way, like, say, the Left 4 Dead example, if at some point you could start pulling in examples or pulling in elements from the story to start resolving it, that might be a good way to ramp down the detriment. Denouement. Thank you.
Improv actors have the principle they talk about, the principle of yes and.
Yes.
So if you think about the game as sort of your improv partner, and you're saying, like, I think this happens, and most of the time in games are like, no, that doesn't happen. You're like, well, I want to go make friends with the zombies. No, that could, like, and, you know, obviously you trim the space, and not every action is possible. You can't be friends with the zombies.
Well, you could totally go and try.
It's, right.
It's not
but
gonna
but
work
wouldn't,
out
it feel, wouldn't it feel better if, I mean, like, in the old Sierra games, like, they would literally have a message pop up that would say, sorry, you tried something we didn't think of.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really frustrating, because, like, you felt clever because you thought of something. And, like, to me, the best moment in the game is, I thought of something and it worked. And or like, is there something over there? Yes. And having seen the game continually say yes to me feels like the first step towards building that coherent narrative out of my actions. That's in the back.
So Left 4 Dead is an example. In order to turn that, which is an interesting experience, into a compelling story arc, all you really have to do is say, okay, now I have choices of things that I can do in the world that are going to affect and maybe finally bring down the total numbers of zombies. So, whatever. You know, you find the red jewel, and that cuts the numbers of zombies that spawned from the director by 10%. You stab yourself with the dagger. That cuts it by another 20%. You drink toilet water. It multiplies it by 400%, whatever. Give you the final goal of killing all the zombies in town or whatever, right? And just give the player a number of different ways of affecting that dial. That does have the possibility of giving you a coherent and interesting story arc that's totally systematically driven.
And Christian says that for what?
So to directly reply to what you were saying, there's a really interesting dialogue, actually, on exactly the stuff you were saying. And I totally get what you're saying, and it's like kind of weird, because like, I half agree and half completely disagree, so I'm very torn. But Roger Ebert, I don't know if you guys remember, like, his whole War of Words with Clive Barker.
Right.
So Roger Ebert basically said the exact same thing you said previously, which is that games cannot be elevated to a higher art form because they do not have a single auteur, which is like a single author creating a narrative for the person to view, because the player can make choices and can affect the story. Of course, that creates a huge backlash from the game community, and they say, like, no, you're completely bullshit, old man. I think Clive Barker actually probably even used those words, because
yeah.
He's Clive Barker. And then so if you look up online, there's actually a whole interesting dialogue about both of the points and counterpoints there, and they both make compelling arguments. The thing that I ultimately end up thinking of is kind of along the lines of what you were saying before, which is that when you even using the old game design, you know, adage of, you know, a game is a series of interesting choices, something like that, what the auteur is doing is actually creating those choices.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is different than creating the story.
I was going to say that exactly. Like I was saying, it's impossible to create a story that bends to every choice the player makes, but you can still give the player choices to make an interesting story that he wants to watch.
The real
so
trick
it's not
is
that they're actually in the story; they're just choosing the story they want to see.
Creates a problem because let us just like take this to its extreme. Let's say we have the ultimate supercomputer, we have infinite hours to program this game, and we've created the game.
This
is
one of the quagmires, by the way.
But let's just say it does happen, and we have the infinite improv bot, and we're playing our thing, and I'm like, hey, let's go be friends with the zombies, and you, the improv bot, go, yes, let's, and we go along and we do that. But the yes and only goes so far. If I keep saying, let's do this, and he goes, yes, let's go do this, let's fly to the moon, yes, let's put on flower pots in our heads, yes.
Well, that's what the and is.
That's no
it's not just saying yes, it's yes and. And you're saying, we're going to go be friends with the zombies,
like,
yes, and now one of them falls in love with you. Like,
this
ooh.
Is that.
Like,
yes.
Oh,
but,
we just took that narrative in a different direction than you were probably
but no, but this is the problematic, is there's no lose condition anymore.
No,
because you
sure,
essentially
there's
you
yeah,
die
if
condition.
You do yes and correctly, there should be like adding tension or something
yeah.
like that. I forgot the
words.
I gave a talk on like improv performance in games at the Semitic College of Art and Design where I attended school recently, and I forgot what the exact. That's right. It was player one says I'm a giraffe, and the other player says I'm a giraffe hunter. I hunt giraffes. Pulls out a gun.
Right.
You know that automatically adds a big
yeah.
sense of.
I go be friends with the zombies, and now there's another group of humans that thinks I'm a collaborator, and they're hunting me down. And like, I mean, there's ways of saying yes that still increase the story tension.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. it's not like a story. It becomes like D&D essentially. It's not
right.
a problem.
Which
it's
games just
like,
want to be D&D,
but there's
a story
like,
there. There's a narrative that comes out of it. It's you know, it's a story that isn't just consisting of your gameplay choices and the game mechanic responses.
Yeah,
and
I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm not saying that's totally
yeah.
wrong.
Quasi.
Like,
do we want to make a differentiation between story and narrative? I think.
Semantics can be tricky. But
I mean,
there is definitely a difference between just the story that the player experiences and what we as designers and developers try to put in there.
Yes.
And that's, you know, those are the gaps where all this lies. I don't know if it's useful to necessarily split those two up, though.
But I mean, I think there's a difference between like Claude is trying to say like it's impossible for us to design a experience from beginning to end for each of those tracks, whereas I think people are arguing that that still doesn't leave out the idea that there's a story there's a tale being told.
Mm-hmm.
That the player experiences along the way.
I guess at some
and
level, I feel like
difference between
that story exists regardless of my efforts as a developer. Like,
right.
like if I just like if just Quake multiplayer, like there's story in there that will come out of it.
Right.
But I guess I feel like that's just not terribly productive for me.
Right.
Because it's going to happen regardless.
I want to, if I may, dovetail off that. I think that we're talking a lot about the story of the game, and in fact, early on you said, well. You know, we're not talking about just sort of the events of the game that happen and then we can tell a story about it, but I think that that's actually shutting off a huge portion of interesting things. The disinteresting thing to me is if I don't give a shit about the story that happens when you string all the events of the game together, because then I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going
right.
to think that I just experienced a story because I'm not telling myself a story. I'm playing Tetris.
Right.
I don't care when I got the long
There's a
block.
Story about those blocks, man.
My point is that it's not that is there a story or is there not a story. It's that most people don't give a shit about that story, and so we're not telling ourselves that story.
And so, I mean, that is the challenge. Is like, I think ultimately a systemic story, like a story that's driven by the player's actions, is something that will potentially engage them more because the idea of, you know, I took a choice. I made a choice. The game world heard me, reacted to me, and is now changing the story it was telling based on what I did. I feel like that's, you know, and maybe I'm a story snob, but to me that's the promise of like what could make games really cool.
Isn't that basically what The Sims does? I mean, doesn't The Sims success based, isn't it all based on the fact that players make changes in the world reacts, there's a story there for them.
But there's not a lot of authored story. It's mostly system interaction, and maybe that's.
I think the Sims is an amazing engine for stories.
Right.
It's just it's really terribly boring stories.
People blog their Sims.
When you're invested in those characters, you want to blog those stories.
But the Sims is a good engine for storytelling. But if you want a story told to you, then you're not really getting your money. Like you have to manufacture the story on top of it, which is different. Like if those characters are coming to me and I'm experiencing their personalities rather than imposing it onto the little walking automata.
Well, that's basically what I was trying to say earlier, where I was like, the concept of truly emergent or something like that versus the game designers, creators, writers, whoever, are actually creating elements that they know are going to be used in the story. And beyond that, they're even crafting crafting ways for you to, they anticipate you using them. So, because the definition you just gave right now, where you said, like, you know, someone's affects the story, someone does something which affects the story, and the game's now seems to go in the direction. One, you can make them believe that they're doing that, and not necessarily even actually doing it.
That's
which
a
is
very
a
good
huge
point.
Thing.
Yeah.
So you can make them be like, oh, well, he can actually like save the princess if he wanted to, instead of when he was told to assassinate her.
Right.
And the thing is, like, you like, there's tons of ways to influence the player to be, have that be one of the options. Okay. Or B, he doesn't assassinate her, but someone jumps at the last minute and it ends up going that direction anyways. I mean, there's a lot of ways to keep things on rails where it's all clouded that it's actually on a rail.
Right.
And another thing is also just it doesn't need to necessarily like, if what you're talking about is like the player does something which changes the story. It doesn't necessarily need to be drastic. I mean,
right.
we've been for how many decades now putting in little text strings of whatever your character's name is,
mm-hmm.
of saying like, oh, well, you know, I played, you know, some MMO and I get to announce to the world that I just killed the fabled dragon and search my, you know, thing in there. It's literally like adjusting the story of that server and per my actions. It's not really.
In Oblivion, after you hit a certain point in the main quest, you're the hero of Kvatch, aren't you? And just little stuff like that. It's really stupid, and it's pretty clearly obvious from a game developer's perspective. Like, oh, I know exactly what they did there. It's a conditionalized sound file that they put in. Like, there's nothing fancy there. But as a player, you're like, yeah, I did something cool, and people in the world know who I am now.
It's a specific reaction to something that you've necessarily done, you know, elicited in the game. The thing that's interesting, one of the things most interesting in MMOs, they're doing more of that they didn't do. First MMOs you played, the communities were so small that there was, you know, information about who amongst the players was so-and-so. I've never really seen, however, the thing is, due to the way MMOs had to be produced for so long, I've never really seen much at all of memorializing players actually in the world in any way, or the actions of players.
There is an artist who has done this with Second Life. She or he has created an institute in which you essentially... you volunteer your Second Life character for death and memorialization. Your account is deleted, and there's a statue put up, like, in your honor. It's very strange, but
so
you essentially creating a
so when I say memorializing, I mean literally, like, you died. I mean, like, recording, like so-and-so was the first person on this server to slay Anixia or something like that, and having that be on a wall somewhere in the world. That's actually a relatively minor thing. The first MMOs, just do the way that... Do the way you have to make them, where it's like, you know, multiple servers and shards, and they all have to be identical. You know, getting identical resources and actually recording stuff, and then you got QAs with that. But there's still so much that can be done there, because you are creating a somewhat of a narrative for that community, for that environment that has changed.
Mm-hmm.
That it's still relatively small, little minor things.
Have you ever watched EVE Online TV?
What?
Mm-hmm. The EVE Online, like the corporations
EVE Online,
became.
EVE Online is actually a really interesting example, because every time there's a name, you can't do basically because there's multiple servers. EVE Online is one server.
Right.
So a lot of the stuff I just said, they actually do.
Yeah.
As a massively multiplayer online role playing game engineer, I want to say that I hate that term. And B, there isn't a restriction. There's no technical restriction. We have per server. Data on each server, and it's son of a bitch when it goes wrong.
Right.
But the point I actually want to get at is Puzzle Pirates is another example where it's like, oh, I can see who settled this island, and like the players all get together and compete to settle the island. And once they do, like, it's always on there, which is cool. And actually, one of the reasons when you opened this up, I said, it depends on the definition whether I've worked on a game that has emergent gameplay, because I don't work on Puzzle Pirates, but I do work on MMO. And
That's exactly the reason I raised my hand and took it back.
Yeah.
For exactly the same thing, because I worked in MMO, and there's spaces to do that.
Sure.
But...
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Ebert.
I was going to say, two things, actually. So I agree, like, wholly with what you were saying earlier about, just, like, we can still offer some choices to the player to, like, alter the story. And I think if we go along that approach, as opposed to, like, giving them full control of the story and the full control of the world, we can create way better experiences. I think we can... Like, one of the things I'm interested in is having a world with, like, dynamic interactions where, like, the world interacts with each other. And a really cool way to do something with the story there is provide a story that would exist and that you can influence. Not necessarily you, like, mm-hmm. take control of everything, but you can influence it and watch it as you wish. Second point is that with MMOs, the problem is people. So, like, if you have, like, a memorial service like that, people are going to rush to become, like, Lolbutz, the Slayer of Onyxia.
Yep.
Yeah, but
so, like, they'll do that anyway.
It ruins, like I, for me at least, in my experience with multiplayer games, it, like, ruins it for me. It's just, like, a lot of people don't want to, like, roleplay or whatever. And
in a single-player game, your behavior is kind of contained to yourself, and so you're not, like, messing with other people's roleplaying experiences. So an MMO can either hugely benefit from other people's, like, tendency to roleplay, or it can be damaged by it. And so I wonder if that's part of the considerations that some of, like, the actual implementers have.
But is that not a function of mechanics? You know, when a role-playing game is, you are playing a role, you are taking on the mentality of a character, and it does not make sense for, you know, for Lolbutz the warrior to be talking with his friends and be saying, oh yeah, this sword does 23 damage over this many seconds, creating a DPS of this. This is bad, but, like, I keep hearkening back to it because I was fascinated and frustrated, but at the same time, EVE Online, you have people screaming at each other over commodities trading, where, like, the ore refiners have formed a cartel and refused to buy ore below a certain price, and, like, people are ready to go to war over this. I'm like, you know, they have become role players because they are taking the role of greedy space pirates and corporate engineers who are engaging in all sorts of crazy.
But that happens on every game. It's just, it's not often that the roles that they're playing match the fiction of the world.
MMOs are a different space, though, because...
What?
Isn't that totally the sweet spot?
Yes. I'm saying it's not qualitatively different, except for the fact that they match.
To be fair, they also, like, CCP actually goes above and beyond to make this case, where they actually have, like, for those who don't know, they bring in influential members of the community to talk about the future of the world and of the story.
Right.
I mean, this is a very unique example, but it's actually very, like, the amount of, like, player investment of the average E player, or who plays, you know, a decent amount, is significantly higher than, like, if you talk to most other MMO players, because of that level of engagement that come with CCP and with, like,
personal investment.
So I guess my complaint is more of a complaint about mechanics and MMOs in general. Like, if they're more like EVE, then we can immerse ourselves.
Do MMOs kind of feel like a cheat in this regard, though? I mean, and
absolutely.
This is I might be just very selfish here because I work on single player games, but it feels like, so, you know, the best story is probably always going to be told by a human who can react to you, and you know, the same way, like, you solve balance in a shooter by just making the AI another human, and now you're both on the same level. Like, so it is there a way that the storytelling can be driven more into the system itself and rely less on a human to fill in those gaps and make the motivations more realistic?
Well, I think there have been games, I mean, specifically I'm thinking of BioShock, where the question of creating this narrative for the player has not relied on giving them as many possible choices and making them work, but more on embracing that the player doesn't have a whole lot of choices to make and incorporating that into the narrative in a way that is that fits. You know, BioShock's whole story in the end was based on the absence of choice.
Right.
And...
You quite said his hand up for a while.
Well,
you've had your hand up for a while.
Oh,
so.
Like, I guess, looking at the BioShock point, where do you, where a player can either just go straight through the game, not listen to any of the radio logs, and still have, like, the gist of the experience that was authored, or they can have narrative, I guess, if you want to put in, or just a better understanding of the entire world fiction by actually listening to radiologs and listening to people talking about the fall of Rapture.
Yeah, the sort of on-demand depth.
Right.
Because there's a lot of players who don't care about that and just want to shoot things.
So, I guess, does that also fall under the talk of emergent narrative, where you can have, like, this linear meta-story, but then you can give people, like, if you want to learn more, you know, figure out these things.
I definitely think that that's a step. I mean, it's giving the player choice, and it's giving them choice into how much of the story is revealed.
They
can't change it.
Here's the option,
right.
Not to read all the text.
Okay, yeah, like, it's like skipping a cutscene in a way. Like,
That reminds me a lot of Oblivion and Morrowind and The Elder Scrolls, where there's books upon, like, you can go and
people do.
There's online libraries of all of the text transcribed of every book that's ever been in an Elder Scrolls game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of text.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a novel in there. And it's not necessarily the storyline, but it gives that depth. I'll never see the Wolf Queen, mm-hmm. but
know her history.
Yeah, there's like a lore there. And it gives you the feeling that this universe isn't cardboard, built up facade. It really makes the universe itself feel deeper.
So it feels like depth on demand is a win, like in terms of, like it does, it lets the players who don't care about that still have a good time with the game, and lets the players who do care about that get their fix.
Come with like developing anything, there's always a backstory before you present it to the player, but they just don't always get the chance to see it.
Right, but I wonder. So is there a way depth on demand could be advanced in such a way that, what if you take the Myst analogy, what if every book I read I could step into? And, technical limitations aside, would we still write all those books? Probably not. But, like, but if you had the opportunity to experience the stuff you're reading as opposed to just hear about it, or, like, if you're listening to the Rapture logs and that gives you the chance to travel back to that moment and even just witness it in real life, as a ghost or something. Holy crap,
say,
people over here.
We could totally use that for something like procedural storytelling, where, like, with the MMO example, should you be in an environment where people aren't douchebags, you could have
impossible.
Situations. You could have situations where someone goes and slays a Nyxia or whatever, and then you create a story about that that's told to people through books.
So
that's a chosen story.
So we're sort of taking note of what the player's doing,
right,
and making a narrative based on that afterwards.
Being an optional narrative.
So, if you think
hot off the press is the hero of,
yeah, if you think like the opening of Chrono Trigger has this great sequence where they build a case against you in a trial because the game was watching the things you did in the opening scene in the marketplace, and that was a really cool moment, because if you don't do those things then they can't build the trial, but you don't know that they're watching you, but unfortunately the game sets up this expectation that we're paying attention to all these things you're doing, and they never follow through on it for the rest of the game, and that was those kinds
also
of moments.
The outcome of the trial is pretty much the same.
but it's cool to feel like, oh, like all that stuff that I think the game is not paying attention to, they actually are. And like, in games a lot of times you're in the middle of talking to somebody and you just cancel out of it and walk away. And if you do that in real life, they're like, hey, what the heck? But in the game they don't care, because it's not fun as a player to have people nagging you.
But they just don't connect anything.
Yeah, it's outside the sort of the story and the narrative of the game, I think, and so we don't. It doesn't feel like anyone in the game really gives a shit about what you've been doing, because it's just achievements, and maybe your friends care, maybe.
No, they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, and you say that punishing the player for not paying attention and walking away in the middle of a conversation with someone wouldn't be fun. I'd actually kind of disagree. An easy mechanic example of this was a Splinter Cell's Chaos Theory. Where if you were playing cooperative multiplayer and you were talking in a microphone to someone, if you spoke loudly, it actually had volume. So if you spoke loudly into the microphone with your friend, the guards would come looking for you.
Mm-hmm.
All that needs to happen is once, and you spend the entire game. You know how tense it is to be whispering to your friend online? I would love to play a game where even an opening or in the middle of a sequence, if you're talking to someone and you look away,
like someone who's, you know, a little more aggressive snaps at you. Look at me when I'm fucking talking to you. Like, that would be great. You would look at every single other person in the game. Like,
or every time you go to start a conversation and then, like, the choices are up and you go get a drink or something, like, the guy's like, excuse me? Are you gonna, are we talking? All right, I'm going to go.
Like, piss off.
Yeah. So, did you? No?
What? My question is, what about where does it have procedural narrative? How does this connect?
Yes. So procedural narrative, the idea of trying to assemble a story on the fly, and this is where, like, your idea of having these little elements that, you know, if you define elements and preconditions on elements, could you create some kind of story out of that that feels cohesive and feels interesting? Is that NPR?
So we were talking about The Sims earlier, and how I think a lot of people, and I certainly said it, that The Sims creates sort of boring stories, but it does create stories that the player cares about. And I would be really interested to know if we can take an engine for a story like that the player cares about, and if we can shape constraints and affordances into it that would allow us to make an engine of story that creates more interest. I don't know the answer. I don't know if that's possible.
You could, you know, take something like The Sims and then just pick two or three points where you introduce a common plot element that stands for arc. Like, you know, halfway through the game, their house is going to burn down. It's going to happen every time, not just for the, you know, people, mm-hmm. you know, but everyone's house is going to burn down, so you're going to get to watch your little dudes, you know, build up their house and then deal with no house and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you can do stuff like that pretty easily. Whether it makes for a more compelling game than just The Sims, I don't know.
Well, once...
I didn't find The Sims actually that compelling.
Yeah,
Once you're willing to have those kinds of authored anchors in the story, though, that gives you... It gives the developer and it gives the player sort of room to... I mean, the same way you never just start from scratch. Like, it gives us a moment of like, okay, so we know the house is going to burn down. What can we do leading up to that? What can we do coming out of that that would be more interesting for the player? Like,
I think it would be more interesting if you left the iron on and then the house burns down.
So it comes from a player choice, is what you're saying.
Player choice
equal good.
As a kind of maybe possible to play devil's advocate on that, like, sometimes I hate it in games when I have, like, my own constructed vision of, like, what my character would behave like, and the game forces me to do something that, like, no, my character would not do that. He's a lone wolf. He doesn't want colleagues, you know, screw the party on my team, you know. So, like, I think doing almost like Deus Ex Machina type of things of, like, there was just a disaster and your house burned down, how would you make your characters react?
Then you choose how to react to it.
Right. And the second time through, you would play the game saying, well, I'm going to keep most of my money in the bank because I know my next real estate investment is going to burst in around 10 minutes.
Sure. Is that interesting?
Bad?
Yeah.
Not the second time.
So then, but then
it
a
does,
good
it does,
engine
would,
you know,
floods.
Yeah, but does every game completely replayable?
Or the
all right, that's cool.
Yeah,
I like. There are games
I
play replay a lot, so I'm not.
Flip over to the side of the room again.
To kind of answer your question, for what it's worth, there actually was. It was actually some research a guy did at the lab a long time ago, as part of the cinema group, like with Gloriana. The professor he did it with was Gloriana Davenport. I can't remember the guy's name for the life of me. And he actually did stuff where it was basically like a story generator. And like, we're not talking like the little like dinky stuff that I've seen in like one or two games, but we're talking about like he actually, you know, you could create a bunch of characters and you could, and then you create a bunch of like plot elements, you know,
mm-hmm.
like so and so gets sick, so and so dies, or so and so, you know, family, you know, close associate is threatened, or like all different things, and then generate a story. And the thing is, this was done in like 98.
Right.
Now, the thing about the game industry is simply that, you know, to take something like that and then try to incorporate it in a game that has to make money, it's an unknown entity, and it requires more research and development. It's one of the things, like, there has been research been done over here in the game industry, not so much. The most interesting thing I will add about it was that, to me, when he did the research and when I read it, I think it was, I actually found it pretty interesting, was, I can't really remember this either, but there were some English or literature people a long time ago that did a, or maybe it was sociology, did a breakdown of all the myths and fables in
Joseph
and, like,
Campbell.
What?
Joseph Campbell.
Well, no, it wasn't Campbell. It was the Russian folk. There we go. Thank you. And they listed, like, here's the list of however many it was. It was like 41 standard stories,
right?
Yeah. That every single one of these can match to one of these stories, like, you know, Brotherhood Six or something. And so what he did actually was use that as like a seed generator,
mm-hmm.
for here's my elements. I'm generating one of these 41 mm-hmm. stories that's like using these elements, and it actually works pretty well. when you use that kind of seed, when you try to just generate randomly from like here's a character, here's
yeah.
things he likes,
there are
here's a situation, then you get like using
probably generates an infinite number of mediocre stories.
Right. Those archetypes exist from popular culture.
I was just getting the wrapping up signal
absolutely.
from the big D. So. Certainly we can continue talking about this, but I think they want us to sort of try to close the session down and move on to other stuff.
I do think that
Darius came over and did this.